organizer, for inviting me. So I'll talk about work with Ellen Newell at Arizona about patterns on plants, basically. So this is the university's crest top saguaro. That's for Iran, who's been looking for a picture of this for a long time. Hasn't found one, so that's it. So I'll describe patterns on plants, basically these ridges and hexagons. And then I'll talk about the more classical problem of phyllotaxis, which basically has to do with this idea of Fibonacci sequence, golden angle appearing on plants, and I'll relate these two ideas. All right, and then I'll present the model, which basically we sort of view the plant of a shell that buckles as the growth forces occur, and I'll sort of reproduce these patterns. So here's the idea. So that's the saguaro, sort of these stripe patterns that we're familiar with, and also lots of dislocations in this particular saguaro, whatever you call those defects. And these are examples of hexagonal patterns, so, and they're not clear everywhere. But on this pine cone, for example, you see lots of hexagons. This is an elephant tree. And if you look closely on these other plants, you see them too. Here, the main sort of pattern is a roll pattern, so these ridges that sort of define what the plant looks like. But if you look closely, you can see that they're hexagons that make the shape of each sort of, you might have to get close, but the places where the stickers are hexagonal in shape. So, well, here's another example of hexagons, so you have to think about this a little bit, but basically the florets and this daisy are arranged in a hexagonal pattern, and you also see sort of these pentahepta defects in the florets here, too. So, here's another example of a cactus that shows a strong sort of stripe pattern in some areas. It's a sort of turbulent hexagonal pattern up here, but it sort of goes from being hexagons to rolls as sort of the main plant. All right, so, well, here's another example. But all right, so the basic one way of sort of looking at plants, well, way of that I'll, broad classification in terms of pattern are these sort of very ridge-like plants. The pumpkin, for example, you see, well, it's just basically means a sphere with ridges on it. Saguaro is basically defined by its ridges, also you have these little bumps on it, which will sort of come back to this hexagon idea. These are, again, very ridge-like plants, but again, we're going to be looking at sort of where these white fuzzy dots are placed on the plant, and that will have something to do with these arrangements of hexagonal patterns on plants. All right, so it sort of goes from more roll-like to more hexagon-like as you go across this picture. And so now, okay, so now that was rolls and hexagons. And now I just want to, here's sort of a classical problem with phyllotaxis. So phyllo means leaf, taxis means arrangement in Greek. And so we're looking at the arrangement of leaves on plants, okay? So cactuses have stickers instead of leaves. And, well, so let's see, that's a cactus with, and that's a cactus, and that's a pine cone, and that's an olive branch. And the thing is that this pine cone, you can sort of see what's the basic arrangement here. The bracts are arranged in sort of spirals that go around in, well, the two different ways. There are 13 spirals in one direction, 21 the other one. So it's this Fibonacci sequence. I'll explain in more detail in a bit. But that's also a sort of spiral arrangement of the stickers on the plant. Again, it's 13, 21 spirals in the two directions. Okay, but these two plants show a very different pattern. Well, maybe not that different, but so here what you have a pair of stickers here, and then you sort of rotate 90 degrees, and you have another pair of stickers that's equidistant from the center. You rotate again, you get another pair. That's basically what's happening on this olive branch. You get pairs of leaves that sort of rotate in 90 degrees. Okay, so first I want to set down a framework to describe these arrangement of leaves on plants. And so here's a cactus. And what I've done is I've numbered the leaves of the stickers according to the distance from the center. So number 1 is the closest to the center, and number whatever 19 is 19th from the center. So if you do this, you notice two characteristics of the plant. First of all, if you take consecutively numbered leaves, take the angle between them, that's a constant. That's a constant for this plant. So the angle between 8 and 9 is the same as the angle between 9 and 10. Also, you can either take the ratio or the difference between the length, the distance from the center of consecutively numbered leaves, and they'll also be called, they'll also be a constant. It's called the Plastikon ratio, the distance. All right, so that's just another way of saying the following, that if you take a transformation of this cactus to an angular and radial plane, that you have a lattice in this plane. Okay, so the number one corresponds to the one over there, and so on. Okay, so basically, phyllotaxis occurs in lattices, lattice arrangement of leaves. Being a lattice, then, you can choose generators for the lattice. And for this particular cactus, the natural generators are the ones close to the center. So here you see a 3. That would be, that sort of corresponds to this 5, the yellow generator. And, well, okay, so if you pick, and this is the way, so 3 and 5, I've divided the radial coordinate by the plastic cone ratio, or difference in this case. So 3 and 5 appear on the right-hand coordinate. And then if 2 pi times little d is your divergence angle, this is just a way of writing these two left-hand coordinates for these generators. All right, so you can extend those generators out in the plane. You get the little spirals I've been talking about. And the consequence of having the 3 and the 5 is that there'll be, you can make 3 spirals that go around in one direction, 5 spirals that go around in one direction that corresponds to the yellow generator for the lattice, and 3 spirals that go around the other direction corresponding to the red generator. Okay, so that's, this is the, well, 3 and 5 are Fibonacci numbers. That's the most common number, most common thing that you'll find, is that the spirals on the plant will be Fibonacci numbers of spirals. So you can choose one more thing that's important here. So let's just take the sum of these two generators. That will correspond to a family of 3 plus 5 equals 8 spirals that go around in that direction. Okay, so I mean, the point is that, so this 8 thing, the sort of left-hand coordinate of that generator with the 8 on the right-hand side is approximately 0, all right? I mean, basically, these 8 things, spirals that are going around this way, are almost just purely radial deformation. I mean, spiral, lines you draw. Okay, so in general, this is a general generators for a phyllotactic lattice. So in general, if you pick 2 numbers, M and N, these will be the corresponding to the 3 and the 5 that I just talked about. These are called the Peristici pair for the plant. So choose 2 generators, M and N. Choose numbers P and Q according to the Euclidean algorithm so that PM minus QN is equal to the greatest common divisor of M and N. Then you pick some number D, which will correspond to the divergence angle. Some number lambda will correspond to the plastic cone ratio. Put all these into these little formula, and you'll get 2 vectors that will be the generators for a lattice on the plane, which in the plant would be a lattice with divergence angle 2 pi D and plastic cone ratio lambda. Okay, so for example, in this plant, we pick 3 and 5. Those are natural numbers for this plant because we have 3 and 5 spirals. P and Q, in this case, are 2 and 1. Stick everything in. You just choose some lambda. Lambda I'll just basically ignore for this talk. G is 1. D, in this case, will be approximately 1 plus 2 divided by 3 plus 5 equals 3 eighths. So that just means that this generator here, so the sum of these two vectors, will basically have a 0 left right-hand coordinate. So I've switched coordinates. That corresponds to the right-hand side in that. Okay, so it's left-right change. But you can also describe these sorts of plants. So you have the pairs of 2 that alternate. You just have to pick M and N equal to 2 and 2. So the greatest common divisor is not 1 anymore. And this makes these little whirl-like patterns where you have pairs of leaves that are equidistant from the center. All right, so let me go back to that plant that we were looking at before. So this is a plant with a 5-3 spiral pattern. This plant here, which was a plant I showed earlier of sort of almost radial deformation, almost a roll-like deformation of the surface, is a plant where, okay, I mean, it's a 3. If you look at the little fuzzy white spots, you do the same thing, calculate their lattice parameters. You get again that you have a 3. Let's see, so the 3 red spirals going in the opposite direction from this one in this case. So here the red spirals are going this way. In this case, the 3 red spirals are going that way. But otherwise, you have the same really lattice that describes these two plants. Just that in this case, sort of the 8 spirals, so in this case we had 8 spirals that were almost purely going out, so almost no really spiraling, just going straight out radially. Here they go exactly straight out radially. Okay, so Well, in the end, what I'll sort of say is that sort of this spiral, this deformation that goes out radially is sort of a way of sort of starting the pattern, and then you sort of push energy into these two other spirals that create the hexagon sometimes, or sometimes you won't. So you either get the ridge pattern, so you get these sort of hexagon patterns. Okay, but let me explain one more thing about plants. So, I mean, the plants that, you know, these little cactuses that you're showing with 3, 5, 8 spiral patterns, when they first grow up, they won't have that. They won't have that characteristic. They'll be sort of, you know, maybe a 1, 2 spiral or something smaller than that. So basically, what happens is that a young plant, well, so here's an example of a plant that's going to go in a transition. So this plant has, I don't know, 8 ridges, and this plant is gaining 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more ridges. Okay, so it's going from a plant that is, well, this is actually sort of a lattice like the one we just had, 8 almost purely radial spirals. In this case, it's going to almost 13 almost purely radial spirals, which aren't really spirals in this case. Okay, so it's weird. I mean, why would this be adding 5 at the same time rather than just going, say, from 8 to 9 or something like that? All right, so, but this is a sequence of generators for fetotactic lattices. So basically, a small plant will have, so you just choose 2 consecutive vectors from the sequence. These will be the generators for the lattice that describes sort of a smaller plant. As the plant grows up, it will sort of switch. It will sort of move from saying having these 2 generators being the natural generators for lattice to having, say, these 2 vectors being the natural generators for a lattice. So it basically goes up in this sequence. It's not completely true, but basically true for this talk. And the thing is that, okay, so I mean, this is not completely defined. These vectors here sort of let D as being, there's number D, which isn't said what it is in this sequence here. But basically, as you move up the sequence, D stays at about P plus Q divided by M plus N. So D has to actually change. So anyway, so that's the big point. You have this lattice, this sequence of vectors, this sequence of generators for a fetotactic lattice. And as you move up here, you keep your divergence angle at approximately P plus Q divided by M plus N. So this is an observation. These are observations about plants. All right, so now I'll present sort of a model. And this is the idea. So this is the cactus that has been cut down the middle and has a bunch of squishy stuff in the middle right here. And on the outside of the cactus is sort of a tough skin. Okay? And so what happens is there, you know, there's usually dirt here, water goes up here, and stuff grows, and most of the stuff gets pushed up in this little region near the top. Okay, so, well, in this region near the top, then the stuff moves out, you know, and stuff moves up from here, moves out, and then moves out like that. Okay, so basically the pattern that is formed, all these where these figures are, basically determined by the growth that occurs right at the growth tip over here. Okay, so the idea is that, well, there's an outer skin to this plant. It's sort of like a shell that's attached to an elastic foundation. So this is a shell, and then this squishy stuff in here is sort of like an elastic foundation for the shell. And so where does the growth really occur? Where does the pattern deformation really occur? Well, it doesn't go right at the tip. So there's a region, sort of a distance, we'll call it R, away from the tip of the plant, where the pattern formation is occurring. So the idea is this, that right at the very tip of the plant, this is not really a shell. It's sort of squishy stuff that the growth act, there's not very much growth occurring there, actually. It's sort of, if you look at, you know, people have done this, but look at how where plants grow, they're not really growing right at the tip. The growth is really occurring in some ring around the growth tip. Okay, and then as the stuff moves out, so as this plant grows, this region right here, for example, used to be near the growth tip, but it isn't anymore. And this is sort of hardened. There's not really much pattern formation occurring over here. It's really in this region where you have 2 things occurring. First of all, the outer skin is sort of has the right consistency to be a shell that would buckle. And secondly, it's there's a lot of growth. There's a lot of growth occurring in here. So there might be some growth forces that would buckle the shell. All right, so before I go on, I should mention that there's experimental evidence that the growth forces and the mechanical properties of the shell are related to the pattern that will form. So this idea of shell buckling as a method that gives rise to phyllotactic patterns was first suggested back in the 1800s by some guy named Spenderer in Switzerland. After Turing came along, reaction diffusion models became the main thing for a long time, and then recently in the 1990s, a biologist at Stanford named Paul Green once again started looking at the mechanical properties of plants and proposed shell buckling as a mechanism for phyllotaxis. And some work has been done by Charles Steele and Jacques Dumay and some other people on this problem. So what I'll do is sort of analyze the elastic energy for the buckling shell and say what I think the reason is for the formation of the pattern. So here's so in that region, that little yellow region, so the region in between the two yellow strips there, where the pattern formation is occurring, here's the energy for the, so here's the elastic energy for that, the shell for the plant in that region. So I won't explain everything in here, but there's something, just the important things is that first of all, what are the functions here? Omega is the shell deformation normal to the original surface. So we sort of think of starting with a spheroidal surface, basically, originally. It doesn't have to be, so we can change the surface, but think for now a spheroidal surface. F here is the potential for the stresses that occur, for the growth stresses and the stresses that are, that are induced by the shell buckling. All right, so here's the energy. It's a function of the shell deformation and the area stress function. And, well, I mean, the important things in some is this elastic problem. So there's a bending energy. And then everything is really linear here, bending energy, except there's also a strain energy, which is the product of this area stress function and the change in Gaussian curvature. That this whole thing is, this just is the change in Gaussian curvature as the shell buckles. Okay, so this bracket here is defined down here. It's just product of second derivatives of omega. This thing is just basically Laplacian, but delta naught is basically Laplacian, but modified by the radii of curvature of the shell. So R alpha and RR here are the radii of curvature of the shell. So we're thinking here of radial and angular coordinates on the shell, basically. And I've approximated the Laplacian by basically a Euclidean Laplacian because I'm not quite sure how to do the. For one thing, I mean, I think it's okay because the buckling wavelength will be smaller than sort of this capital R and the things that occur. And on top of that, it'll be nice to work with the sort of eigenfunctions of the Laplacian. Okay, so if we take the variations of this energy with respect to omega, and this is supposed to be F, you get the equations that are called the Serpil-von-Karman-Donnell equations. And so this equation is basically a force equilibrium equation. We treat the shell as being overdamped, so we just have omega t here. This is a compatibility equation. It says that you can compute the change in Gaussian curvature, which is this number here, if you know the sort of the changes in the stresses. And stresses are linearly related to strains here, so you're basically computing Gaussian curvature by the strains. Yep? Yeah, you ignore boundary conditions from now. I'll start with something about this. But, I mean, it's important, but not for now. Well, no boundary conditions for now. I mean, it's pardon me? It's a time derivative. In the end, I'll minimize this energy. So essentially, it's equilibrium. I mean, it's yeah, but oh, this is a okay. So sorry, this V thing is just the potential for the elastic foundation. It's basically some number times the deformation. So sort of a flaw. There'll be some linearity in it too. But okay, so in the end, in the analysis, there'll be two parameters that are important. First of all, some stress parameter, which combines sort of the forces that come from inside the shell, so from the growth that comes from the plant sort of growing outward radially, and the growth forces that occur within this outer skin of the plant. Okay, and the next thing that's important is the inner radius of this capital R, which is sort of the inner radius of this annulus where the pattern formation is occurring. All right, so you just, again, we go linear stability analysis, find sort of the modes that can grow, and find unstable modes, and then we'll look at the nonlinear effects. Okay, so this picture. Okay, so well, there'll be some equilibrium state, so basically just a constant deformation. There'll be a corresponding equilibrium area stress function, perturb it, and so I'll just call the two quantities in the wave vector L and M here. And okay, so you'll get some region in the L M plane of active modes. Okay, so this picture right here is really the picture you want to think of. The modes that are basically so M modes, modes that have small L and large M will be the modes that are most likely to grow if the growth forces are basically pushing in the rate in, along the angular direction on the plant, which is experimentally what is occurring. So basically, here's the plant. What there's more growth force that pushes out along the angular direction than there is along the radial direction. Okay, so you're supposed to have an anisotropy that is induced by this anisotropic force that comes in. Okay, but it really doesn't matter for the analysis if you had isotropic force, then you just get some annulus modes that can grow. Okay, so non-annular analysis basically comes from, so let me go back to the statement of the equation here. So this one nonlinear term in these equations, it's this term that comes from the change in Gaussian curvature down here, or the this bracket of the area stress function with omega in the equilibrium equation. All right, so that will introduce quadratic interactions, which can give rise to three-wave resonances. In any case, so here is this U here. It's just all the modes that are linearly unstable. And there's one restriction, which is that since, so M here is the angular part of this wave vector, M has to be an integer because of the boundary condition in the angular direction. Okay, so it's really all these green lines in this regions of active modes that are really the active modes. All right, so we just take the energy that we had, project it onto all the modes that are active, and what we'll get is some sum of energy that comes from the linear terms in the equation. So here's just the dispersion relation for the von Karman-Donnell equations. There'll be a quadratic term, and then there'll be some higher order terms. Okay, but what'll be important here is just basically the form of these linear terms, in the equation, so quadratic terms in this energy, and the cubic term in this energy. Okay, so this cubic term is summed over all modes, all resonant modes that are active, and this tau here is a function of the wave vectors. Okay, so let me first sort of put this back into the context of what we were looking at before, sort of these wave vectors, or these phyllotactic lattice. So if you take three modes, K1, K2, and K3, so these three wave vectors, and you look at a deformation that consists of the sum of periodic deformations of those three wave vectors, you'll get a lattice that will be the places where that is the maximum of that deformation. So here's just K1, K2, and K3. Where the ridges all meet, you'll have maxima on a lattice in the plane. Okay, so I have a lattice. I'm going to put this now into the context of the phyllotactic lattice, which just means that I want to change coordinates. I want to change from L coordinates to these D and lambda coordinates. Okay, which just means that in the end, what happens if I choose L1 to be this, so I pick an integer M, I pick an integer N, pick P and Q, so that Pn minus Qn is the greatest common divisor of M and N, and then I just pick some divergence angle, pick some plastic cone ratio, I'll get that the lattice that is the lattice of maximum deformation consisting of those three modes will be on that, these will be generators for that lattice.
How many wavelengths are in
Well, you think of sort of these things growing around the whole annulus. I'm not sure.
The whole annulus, three.
I'm not completely sure what the correct thing is. Here we're looking at a wide enough region. I mean, so R should be large enough so that it's bigger than the wavelength, and so should this annulus.
So the part of this plant that's already grown is kind of at the part where the lattice is going to be.
Right. Ask me if I have questions about the formulation here. Okay, so basically, I mean, this is the sequence of generators for phyllotactic lattices that I say plants follow as they go up. and here's a sequence of wave vectors so that if you took three consecutive wave vectors from this sequence here, look at the lattice of maxima for the deformation defined by those three wave vectors. It'll be on a lattice defined by corresponding numbers, vectors in that sequence there. Okay, so basically, I want to now look at the coefficient of the cubic term and the projected energy. So back here, this tau here is a function of the wave vectors, and I want to look at tau now as a function of, what does tau look like as a function of those wave vectors? Okay, so basically what I've done here is I've picked three wave vectors in the sequence. So this is just as an example, k4, k5, k6. These are the three wave vectors. And so now the wave vectors are functions of d and lambda. And if I pick a lambda, just for demonstration here, and graph tau as a function of those wave vectors, this is what tau looks like. It peaks at these numbers, d equals 1/3, d equals 2/5, and d equals 3/8. So the idea is that tau peaks wherever one of these left-hand coordinates of the wave vector is equal to 0. Right? 3/8 will make this number right here equal to 0. All right, so tau is very big when d is equal to something that makes one of these wave vector a purely sort of radial deformation, a deformation that would be purely a ridge like that. All right, so in the end, what you have to compute is the elastic energy. So the minimizing this elastic energy will be, what we have to do is this elastic energy is now a function of the wave vectors, also the amplitudes, and so we just have to go through, and don't have too much time, I want to show more pictures. But basically, the elastic energy will pick out the right divergence angle. So it will pick out the wave vectors that are most nonlinearly likely to grow. Okay, so, and this is just the picture. So a deformation consisting of three wave vectors, which is defined by those three wave vectors there. So this deformation right here, evaluating those wave vectors at d equals 0.378, which is where the energy told us to minimize the energy. To pick D, we get this picture here. So this is just the plot of this deformation of a spherical surface. Okay, and basically, so having picked 3, 5, 8, we pick the 3 and the 5 and the 8 of the spirals. And also on this plan here, you see a sort of irregular hexagons as the shape of the deformation. This is more hexagonal shape on the actual picture there, the plot there. And we can do more things, so that's sort of called a sixth swirl. So it depends on what wave vectors you choose. This is a two-whirl. This requires having more than one. You have to project your energy into a bunch of modes. Okay, so what I haven't said is that, going back to your question about boundary conditions, so what happens in the real plan? In these pictures here, I just chose three wave vectors. I minimize those energies using just those three wave vectors. On a plant, what will happen is that a small plant will have... there'll be only a few wave vectors that can become active. Okay, those three wave vectors will produce a deformation as the plant grows. That will have a bias and will influence the next pattern that can come on, and this will sort of push you along in this sequence of wave vectors. So the idea is that Fibonacci sequence basically comes from this relationship k1 plus k2 equals k3, and so that's the recursion relation for Fibonacci. So you need that sort of recursion relation coming from a small modes being 1, 1, 2 as the spirals in order to push up. So boundary conditions become important there. But, so I'm out of time, but I want to show you, so that's that picture again. But we can do sort of things with geometry. They're nice cross-Newell things. It's not isotropic anymore, so you can look at, we've done sort of cross-Newell for starting with the Frippolz and Carmen-Donnell equations as the microscopic equations. They're sort of zigzag instability, it's not isotropic anymore, so you're looking at some region LM plane. And this is this year's Arizona barrel cactus bloom. You can see we have red, yellow, and orange flowers.
Thank you very much.